Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Freemasonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. I'm your host, Brother Robert Johnson. This is episode 141. All right, so this week was the Masonic Symposium at Pleiades Lodge in Westchester. If you're listening to this on Sunday night, it was yesterday, Saturday. I'm recording this in advance, and I can guess that I probably had a great time. As of right now, Brother Shimeon, Brother Walk, Brother Gardner, and myself will be there, so I'm guessing it will be a spectacular event. Now, of course, we aren't doing any speaking. We're there to see Brother Charles Harper, Brother Anthony Mongelli, Brother Robert Hurd, and Brother Omar Ali. So we will see what happens. Not much in the way of news this week, so let's jump right into the paper for the week, which is an article taken from the Scottish newspaper from 1998, and I thought it was rather interesting. The title of the article, Edinburgh's New Town is Built on Esoteric Principles. Edinburgh's New Town is built on the same esoteric principles as the Temple of Solomon and the Great Pyramid, according to local historian James Gilhooly. According to a local historian, James Gilhooly claims to have proved that dividing the length of the New Town's 18th century reference points by their width comes within 3,000 of pi, a figure which crops up significantly in ancient civilizations. It is also revered in Masonic circles, and the builders of Edinburgh's New Town were Masons to a man, according to Mr. Gilhooly, a maverick anti-establishment figure. Mr. Gilhooly is the author of A Directory of Edinburgh in 1752, published by Edinburgh University Press, but now out of print. For 8 years, he has been compiling a computer database of Edinburgh between 1690 and 1800, which has attracted interest from the universities around the world. According to him, the reference points of the original early New Town were to last the vestibule of the current Royal Bank of Scotland building in St. Andrew Square, and to the west, a point near the corner of Charlotte Square and Glenfinlass Street, the then limit of the available land. If that distance of 469.3 meters is divided by the distance between Princess Street to the south and Queen Street to the north, 149 meters, the result is 3.1412, almost the value of pi, 3.1415. That is one of the fundamental measurements involved in the Temple of Solomon and the Temple of Cheops, which is very esoteric stuff. It is also fundamental to the beliefs of Freemasonry, and nearly all of those involved in planning the New Town were Freemasons, including the Lord Provost George Drummond and William Milne, the city architect, said Mr. Gilhooly. Although pi was a value derived from a circle, it had many other applications. Quote, "It is nothing more than the ratio which relates to all kinds of things. The Egyptians used it for astronomical calculations. It is also used for expressing frequencies. For example, the result would be pi, whether the calculation was done in meters, feet, inches, or barleycorns." Mr. Gilhooly said that James Craig had won a competition in 1766 to design a plan for the New Town, a prestigious development to take the better off away from the poor. Craig's original plan, bizarrely enough, was based on the Union flag, but only formed a basic guide for city architect Milne's more practical plan. Asked how he stumbled upon his discovery, Mr. Gilhooly said, quote, "I am an engineer by training, and you get very used to the realizing the proportion of things. Effectively, I noticed that there was something quite odd about the proportions. It can't just be accidental. To come within that level of accuracy means that someone sat down and did it deliberately," Gilhooly said. Mr. Gilhooly, a non-Mason, added, quote, "If it wasn't for Freemasons, we probably wouldn't have a New Town. They were also involved in building the Royal Infirmary, the city chambers, indeed anything that was built in the town between 1730 and the 1900s. Yesterday, James Clark, assistant director of the Edinburgh New Town Conservation Committee, said that he was open-minded on the theory. Quote, "The amount of land available to them at that time was originally and purely for natural reasons. It is what Edinburgh was left with after the Lee Age, and just how that happens to be proportioned is more an accidental matter, I would think, than nothing else. I suppose, yes, it is possible, but it wouldn't be very difficult to prove one way or another. I am open-minded on it." Andrew Fraser, the president of Old Edinburgh Club and co-editor of a book on James Craig, said that the plan had to fit with the geography of the site and what the council owned at the time. Dr. Fraser said, quote, "I would be slightly worried about the measurements. I suspect you can decide whether you are including the pavements and so on. Milne was a master mason, but it is not too clear whether he was too keen on the mystical side of things." Dr. Fraser added that he would like more proof on the use of the reference points. "I would have thought that it was a strange idea, and I would like to see a little more evidence." Robert McNeil, The Scotsman, 24th of November, 1988. So kind of an interesting idea that Newtown in Scotland and Edinburgh was possibly built around the number of pi, 3.14, and that in obviously this gentleman thinks that this is some kind of Masonic conspiracy. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Who knows? But next we have another piece, and I love it because it touches on some things that I touch on when I give my presentation on colonial Freemasonry. So without delay, Freemasonry at the Table. Freemasonry at the Table by Brother Stephen E. Patrick, Roslyn, Virginia. Few should be surprised to learn that the early history of the Masonic fraternity was spent in taverns. The craft met, as did virtually every other club and society of the day, in local inns and taverns. Often the proprietor would start a club simply as a means of drawing more business for his establishment. Freemasonry enjoyed a cheerful, convivial nature, and prints of the period reveal that lodges would actually perform ritual work while seated at a table, spread with glasses, bottles, and copious punch bowls. As the ritual became more precise and stylized later in the 18th century, the habit of sitting at the table was replaced with the familiar practicing of calling off to refreshment. Freemasonry exhorts the brethren to follow a number of virtues, including temperance, and even the earliest constitutions carried regulations against drunkenness in the lodge. The practice of enjoying wine and spirits in a lodge room was largely lost in America during the Prohibition movement of the 19th century and early 20th centuries. For many of us, the physical remains of that era of wine and song are strange indeed. Pitchers used for ale or beer were a favorite with early Masons, both at home and in the lodge room. Some were fairly expensive, hand-painted jugs with carefully delineated working tools and emblems along the attractive floral sprays. The use of profuse Masonic symbols on all these objects indicates a practice of using them as a sort of tracing board for instruction while enjoying a glass of beer. Other pitchers of cheaper production were also printed with Masonic designs, made about 1810 until 1820, and filled with working tools and other symbols. This pitcher contained the words to a popular Masonic song. The two pillars, sometimes marked J and B, were the object of the Grand Secretary Lawrence Dermot's joke in the introduction to the ancient Grand Lodge of England's 1754 book Constitutions, known as the Ahiman Raison. Dermot chided the fraternity, saying that many brethren were of the opinion that the pillars were barrels marked to distinguish the Jamaican rum from the Barbadian glassware, and also an important role in the table of refreshment. These pieces range from crudely molded glass hip flasks with royal arch and other Masonic symbols circa 1820 to beautifully engraved lead crystal wine goblets with the simple square and compasses designed and delicate borders circa 1790. Criticism from within the fraternity that the use of alcohol made Masons susceptible to ridicule resulted in the eventual ban of its use in virtually all of the United States. However, these intriguing and often very attractive drinking implements are historic reminders of a time when a joyful collection of Masons would make numerous toasts and sing, "The world is all in darkness about us, they conjecture but little think, a song and drink succeeds the Mason's lecture." Stephen E. Patrick is a member of Federal Lodge No. 1, Georgetown, D.C. He was the assistant curator of the Masonic Library and Museum in Philadelphia, PA, and curator of the George Washington Masonic National Memorial at Alexandria, Virginia, before assuming his present position as director of the Hammond Harwood House in Annapolis, Maryland. All right, really cool stuff. So if you want to help support this show and keep this kind of content coming, there are a bunch of ways to do that. The first being shopping at one of the sites that we are affiliated with. The first is Onnit, where they sell all kinds of healthy living supplements. I use a bunch of them, but mostly I love Alpha Brain. It really enhances focus, and believe it or not, it helps me wake up in the morning if I take it the day before. So maybe I'm getting a better sleep. If you decide that you want to try some, go ahead and click through the links on our website, www.wcypodcast.com. It takes you over to Onnit, and you get yourself some of the awesome supplements that they have there. When you're ready to check out, use the promo code WCY, and you'll get 10% off. And another affiliate that we have is through our friend, brother, podcaster, and also co-host of the Masonic Roundtable, Brother Juan Sepulveda, and his amazing site, FreemasonryArt.com. And whether you're looking for amazing art with a hint of Freemasonry in it or full-blown Masonic prints, he has it all. And they're great pieces, and they are fine art. In addition to this, he has, of course, lambskin aprons, which he can personally hand-draw and paint for you. You got to check them out. And if you decide to get anything, you can just go to FreemasonryArt.com, check it out. And if you do get something, You can use the promo code WCY there as well, and it will give you a 10% discount as well. We also have the show apps, which is a great way to support the show because you get a little something in return. You don't just get streaming access anywhere. You also get access to the papers that we read right here on the show via PDF documents, as well as cool Masonic-themed wallpapers for your mobile device. Those are available on the Amazon Marketplace as well as through the Apple App Store by getting the Podcast Box app. It's also on Windows 8 if you're interested. If none of that is your thing, but you still want to help contribute, consider doing a PayPal donation where you pick the amount. Every little bit helps offset the cost of the show. And all money goes right back into this program, so thanks in advance. Next is this week's famous Freemason. You all know that I love cartoons, and if you didn't, well, you do now. I always loved the fact that Mel Blanc was a brother, and this was one thing I didn't know. One of the famous producers of cartoons, including Bugs Bunny, was a brother in Shriner, Isidore Freeling, or as he's better known, Friz Freeling. Born in 1905 and he passed away in 1995, he was a cartoonist for Warner Brothers. In an illustrious career that has spanned 63 years, Friz Freeling was involved in nearly all aspects of animation as a creator, director, and producer. He created or contributed to many of the most memorable and award-winning cartoons ever produced. He was born in Kansas City, Missouri. Freeling moved to Hollywood as a head animator of Warner Brothers, or Looney Tunes, and Merry Melodies. He animated the first Warner Brothers cartoon ever released, Sinkin' in the Bathtub, in 1930, and directed his first cartoon, Bosco and Dutch, in 1933. Freeling remained at Warner Brothers for 33 years. And during this time, he was a major developer of Warner Brothers characters, producing and directing over 300 cartoons featuring Bugs Bunny, Daffy Duck, Elmer Fudd, and others. In addition, he created Porky Pig, Yosemite Sam, and Sylvester. Clearly evident in all of Freeling's cartoons was a very unique talent for synchronizing the visual gag and the accompanying background music. While at Warner Brothers, Freeling was honored with the Academy Awards for four shorts: Tweety Pie, 1947, Speedy Gonzales, 1955, Birds Anonymous, 1957, and Nighty Night Bugs, 1958, as well as being nominated for several others. In 1963, Freeling teamed up with David DePatie to form DePatie Freeling Enterprises, which produced shorts for Warner Brothers and became the leading independent production company in the areas of animated film production, television specials, and commercials. In 1980, Freeling became a senior executive producer where he produced three feature-length films incorporating his classic animated shorts along with newly animated sequences, the Looney, Looney, Looney Bugs Bunny movie, 1981, and Bugs Bunny's 1001 Rabbit Tale, 1982, and Daffy Duck's movie Fantastic Island, 1983. I've seen all of those, I love them all, and specifically Daffy Duck's movie Fantastic Island is hilarious, so if you've ever had a chance to watch it, just do it. Freeling was the recipient of many prestigious awards. In 1981, both the American Film Institute and the British Film Institute, with major retrospective of his work, honored him. Also that year, the Chicago International Film Festival presented him with their Hugo Award for his lifetime contribution to the animation film industry. In 1982, the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts, and Sciences paid tribute to him at a gala event that featured nine of his most famous cartoons. In 1985, the New York Museum of Modern Art honored Freeling as part of their golden anniversary salute to Warner Brothers Animation. In August 1992, Freeling was honored with his own star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. Friz continued to be a major contributor to the art of animation until his passing in May of 1995. Cities worldwide continued to honor Freeling with film festivals, museum exhibitions, and retrospectives. Pioneering animation director Isidore Friz Freeling died on May 26, 1995, at the age of 89. All right, how cool is that? I mean, a huge staple of me growing up. I was born in the early 80s. And, you know, I loved cartoons so much growing up. And those were my cartoons I watched. And they were all reruns when I saw them. But they're still timeless today. My kids watch them today, and we have a blast. Well, that's it for this week. I really hope you guys enjoyed the episode. If there's anything that you ever want more information about, you want me to cover a certain subject, topic, or maybe you have a paper you want to read, or you want me to read, please find me on Facebook, follow on Twitter, send me a message, or just shoot me an email at wcypodcast@gmail.com. On Twitter, it's at WenceKamu, and on Facebook, it's WenceKamu. Again, check out all the great links to the various Masonic businesses on wcypodcast.com. Remember, three times a week, the Midnight Freemason publishes three articles, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. The Masonic Roundtable is on Google+ and YouTube, live on Tuesdays at 10/9 Central, so check that out. It's basically five panelists, myself included, and we get on there and we talk about Masonic subjects and things that are going on within the fraternity right now. It's a very cool show. And right now I'm actually in the process of getting all those episodes up on iTunes as an audio podcast. So you'll be able to either watch it live, watch it in syndication on YouTube, or you can just listen to it via iTunes or any other of your favorite podcast websites. Remember, the Valley of Chicago Dyslexia Center Walk is the 31st of May. So if you can swing a donation or you want to participate, please visit walkfordyslexia.org. Well, I'll talk to you all next week. Stay on the level. And for Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.